Am I unique?
I don't think so. I struggle to find an individual whom I need to forgive. Instead, my list is systems, the U.S. government, immigration policy makers and enforcers, institutional American Christianity. I'm feeling stuck in this trauma trap. I'm working on it.
Welcome to the Scraps Podcast. My name is Chris Tripolino.
And I'm Melissa Locke.
And today we get to welcome our friend Callie Pliego. Hi, Callie.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming, Callie.
Yeah, we're excited about it. So we've been digging into this conversation that we are calling learning the F word. And this F word that we've been struggling mightily against or with has been forgiveness. And it really is, it has the power to sort of mess things up. It's offensive and uncomfortable and interesting and really amazing. And so we want to explore some extra little trails in forgiveness. And we were really struck by what you wrote, Callie, on your card this week at our Sunday gathering. And actually, Melissa, do you want to just go ahead and read that?
Yes.
We
would be honored to. So, Callie's card. Am I unique? I don't think so. I struggle to find an individual whom I need to forgive. Instead, my list is systems, the U.S. government, immigration policy makers and enforcers, institutional American Christianity. I'm feeling stuck in this trauma trap. I'm working on it.
So I can unpack that.
Yeah.
Right? Thanks. Okay. So I was initially relating to a part of your message, Melissa, where you talked about how you felt like you didn't have a lot of work to do around forgiving others.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out who to write down.
Yeah, either. Right. Exactly. And I don't think I even did write a person down. Instead, I went to my communication card and I wrote this message. So, even though I feel kind of almost like I've mastered forgiveness in a certain way with individuals, where I really struggle is with the systems I interact with on a daily basis and by necessity. Most of the community, I think, is aware that I am married to an undocumented immigrant, and for whom there isn't a legal way towards legal status in the country. So, we just have to deal with the reality that gives us. Which is why I talk about on my card that the U.S. government, is offensive to me. Policymakers on immigration and enforcers like ICE, and even the institutional American Christianity. I mean, there's individuals within that system, but just kind of like figureheads of the system, which make me think like that's the whole system, which have been really damaging to me personally and even my faith and things like that over the years. And so, and it's all related to who I chose to marry. And who I fell in love with, and it feels very unjust and unfair. And so I'm challenged to find a way towards forgiveness with these systems.
Yeah. And I think that's what really struck me about seeing what you wrote on the card is how personally forgiveness and justice issues crash together in this. And to have you thinking and being convicted that, yeah, forgiveness, I think, still does have a place. But what is that? And what is the reality of this trauma trap that you're naming here? Because I think it's a real thing. And it's really dangerous to think that, and wrong, to think that forgiveness is the answer to all the hurts. Because there are so many hurts that are actually the result of injustice.
Mm-hmm.
Which no matter how much you work on forgiving others, those hurts are still there for you every day. You cannot walk away from them.
Right.
Like they're part of your daily life.
Yeah, that was part of the damaging message of the institutional church that has traumatized me is, just pray about it or, you need to forgive and everything will be better. So I definitely don't buy into that and I don't wouldn't ever want to project that onto others.
Right.
But with the trauma trap, I guess what I'm talking about is like living within a system that is unjust, feels oppressive, and having to function within that system on a daily basis when the offense is daily.
Yeah.
And so how do you manage that?
Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. we talk about forgiveness helping, you know, free you up from the confinement of the hurt, but you're literally experiencing the hurt, like, actually confining movement in your life. Mm.
That's true. Like,
literally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, that strikes me hard. Mm-hmm. And so if forgiveness, you know, I think there is this is a great way to explore both the power of forgiveness and its limits. You brought up the story of Malala when we were talking.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that might help us unpack it a little and explore it a little more.
Mm-hmm.
So for folks that don't know her story, she was shot by a young Taliban man as a young woman who was speaking up for girls' education.
Right.
In Afghanistan. So why did you bring her up?
I just kind of peripherally know her story from her being in the news, and I read only the beginning of her book. But I kind of think of her as somebody who rose up out of an oppressive system and found her voice and found healing and was able to express forgiveness in certain ways that I guess is what I'm seeking for myself, mm-hmm. you know, that power. And so that's mm-hmm. why kind of her face came into my mind when mm-hmm. we were talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't know, just seeing her speak or hearing her story, it makes it pretty clear that there's still, like, she's not immune from the realities, right? It's
yeah.
there's still injustice that she's fighting. There's still probably hurt in some ways that she still carries mm-hmm. from all of that.
Yeah, definitely. I think what I was hearing as, you know, after you said that, I looked up a few of the places that she talks about it and reflections mm-hmm. on it. And one of the things that seem to come out of it is that you can forgive individuals.
Hmm.
And maybe there's some power in that. Like, is there? I mean, that's one of my questions. Is there some freedom and empowerment in that? And she seems to clearly say, yes, there is.
Uh-huh.
And she's not saying that the system is fixed and that it's not hurting.
So she's holding that juxtaposition in her...
I guess.
In her message.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there's a lot of wondering in me about, like, what is her daily life like? You know, I don't know. Like, I think she is still probably in danger, and that's mm-hmm. hard. Like, what does it look like to live? This is your question, Kelly, that you've shared, live into forgiveness while living with these daily oppressive, dangerous, traumatizing situations. And there are many, way too many people in our world living with that every day.
Right.
It's hard.
I mean, what else is there to say? I know.
Right?
Which is why when I was writing my card down, I was thinking, and I started with the line, am I unique? I don't think so. Because I know that my experience with this is not singularly just about me and what I experience personally, but that there are many ways that people interact with systems that are oppressive and traumatizing and dangerous but don't have a choice to exit the system. And so, I think it's worth exploring.
Yeah. So is it fair to maybe say that, forgiveness does not depend on justice, that we could explore how, you know, the role that it plays, but it's definitely not the same thing, and it's mm-hmm. not the whole answer,
mm-hmm.
And that we absolutely need to work toward justice and build our capacity to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess, you know, so extending my personal story, I've done, that's the trajectory that I've been on, trying to engage these systems to change them. And I woke up this morning with that on my mind about resilience and how sort of by definition being resilient is stepping out of the victim mentality and working on the things that you can control to make change. And so there's this ebb and flow where I feel between despair when I'm stuck in that victimhood and that, like, kind of what I, where I was on Sunday when I wrote the card, and then bringing our conversation, bringing me back into hope of, like, okay, well, what are the things that I can work on? Where can I engage? Where can I take action to actually work on justice, bringing justice?
Mm-hmm. So where are some, I mean, do you, so you're asking what can I do, and what are some of those things that you feel you can do?
Well, I mean, specific to my situation, I have done lobbying, political, getting engaged, you know, like speaking with representatives in Congress, so the Senate and the House, and at the local level as well, campaigning for Hutch for sheriff last election. So there's ways that I've been engaged in politics, and also sharing my story with others to educate the general public who don't touch up against these systems naturally and so don't know what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to form opinions if you don't have experience to teach you. So, you know, mm-hmm. being on this podcast, being on this other podcast, which I'll plug if that's okay,
yeah.
Love Beyond Borders. You can find it on iTunes and everywhere. So just sharing that story and getting the message out that that there are actually people who are citizens like me and like my son Mateo who are impacted by injustice in a way mm-hmm. that feels out of our control, but yet there are certain things that we do to try and make a difference.
So can I just say, and Chris might... You might be feeling something like this too, but I feel like the more I know your story, the more crappy I feel that you're the one out there doing the work.
Right.
And you're affected by the hurt, and you're putting yourself out there to do the work. But because you're sharing the story, you know, I hope that I am growing in empathy and capacity to show up in
yeah.
these kinds of situations.
Mm-hmm.
Because I... I'm not in the position of, I can, like, quote, set, take a break from the news
mm-hmm.
because I'm tired, you know? Like,
mm-hmm.
I, but in your life, you actually can't take a break from the implications of
yeah.
these systems right,
right
now. And there are lots of other people, you know, situations that we can name of people who are living with different, with much less privilege than I'm living with, for example. And what does that mean? For me, is a question that comes up, and I think is one that I'm really waking up to in terms of how it hurts me when
mm-hmm.
my community is not whole. Like when we're not.
Mm-hmm.
This is a crappy situation that we're living in.
Mm-hmm.
And just like to reiterate what you were saying there, but the system. Almost demands that the people affected, like the victims of this oppression and hurt, are the ones that then have to also show up with bravery to
yeah
to sort of lay it all out there, to put yourselves on the line. And I don't know, I think there's almost, I assume at least in this situation for you, that there's almost like a pre-forgiveness that happens, like forgiving the ignorance of the people around you that, like, well, I know what you're going to say already. I know
yeah.
your perspective on this. And sometimes it's maybe not quite fair or whatever, but like having to enter into these conversations and interactions with people that just have the sort of standard company line,
mm-hmm.
and you have to, figure out what forgiveness means in those sort of glancing interactions too.
Yeah, well, that's a really good point, and it's very true. It's a good, astute observation. And I think that it kind of calls to the focus that forgiveness is a posture.
Mm-hmm.
That I can choose
mm-hmm.
to live with. And so when I have interactions with people, on an off day, I may not do that well and kind of spin out of control and be mm-hmm. angry if somebody challenges my
yeah.
Can I just say that
experience.
Kind of understandable.
Yeah.
Like, can I forgive you for that?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
You are forgiven.
Thank you. But really, what I really strive to is to meet people where they are at and have that be the starting point for education and just be open with myself, which also, can be dangerous,
yeah.
depending. So kind of being able to navigate that landscape and know who it's safe to be kind of quote unquote out with, is also something that I kind of wrestle with isn't the right word, but just kind of like always have in my mind. Mm-hmm.
So you had heard a quote that was moving you lately, and I think it's really powerful.
Yeah.
In this conversation. Can you share that?
Yes. Okay. So, it was on Facebook and I can't remember if it was a meme or if it was on like a protest card at something recently, but it said, "I've learned to stop accepting that which I cannot change and have started to change what I cannot accept." And, I just felt like that was really relatable to me and hopefully to others.
Yeah.
Just to jump in and get engaged.
That's a big twist on the Serenity Prayer, isn't it?
Sure mm-hmm. is.
Do we need mm-hmm. to say it? Like, that one is... Well, how does it go?
God, give me the...
oh, boy.
Okay,
well, none of us are in AA, apparently.
Not very serene.
It used to be hanging in my garage, but no, it's...
But it's like the grace to accept the things I cannot change.
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, this pushes against the traps that you can fall into with a prayer like that of this helplessness or kind of excuses for inaction and maybe blaming other people when there actually is unacceptable stuff going on that you could own and maybe take some action toward, right?
Right.
Yeah, that needs correction and justice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me, I just read in The Atlantic yesterday this article about Greta Thunberg, I think I'm saying that right, and how people were critiquing her as this teenager that's just, needs to understand that democracy also takes patience. So yeah, here's the quote from the end of that article. "Yeah, patience is a democratic virtue, but sloth is a cardinal sin. Perhaps only the young can tell the difference." And I thought, ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, where does our quote-unquote patience lose its potency and power and become this helpless position or this excuse?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll just pipe in here, still with my personal experience, but it's really good. Having been in Senate offices and with the Congress, people with power to actually make a change and being told, just wait, your time is coming, just wait for years, just wait. And with that, it's kind of like there's an implicit promise that we just never see. And, we just keep hanging on so those would maybe be some individuals that I need to forgive, actually.
Yeah.
So how does forgiveness still play into this? I mean, are we seeing the place, the roles that it can have here? You're just bringing these people up. I'm feeling maybe like the self-forgiveness thing is important.
Yeah.
Right.
Which involves owning responsibility.
Yeah, I'm glad to have had this conversation. It has kind of unearthed some spaces where I can have some direct focus on forgiveness, which is, I'm grateful for that. And also, talking with you too, sort of having this conversation and figuring out that that forgiveness is a posture, and maybe it's not just for a system or, you know, something like that, but it's something that I can just choose to live into daily and, try and be disciplined about that. And
to also accept, receive forgiveness in that, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, yes, it's a fluid kind of motion, right?
Yeah.
It goes both ways, where that's forgiveness in, forgiveness out, like kind of like waves in the ocean.
Yeah, but does it make it any easier? Probably, you know.
Not easier.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, Melissa, we had talked about this story from the New Testament scriptures about Jesus healing a paralyzed man.
Yeah.
And that ended up on the cutting room floor for your message this week. But the basic story is that Jesus shows up in town and there's a big line and these guys are desperate for healing for their friend. And so they climb up on the roof and they, you know, rip apart the thatch of the roof.
So Jesus is in this building and it's all crowded and like there's tons of people.
Yep. So they just got to get there however they can. And so they end up going up on the roof, carrying this paralyzed man and then lowering him down right in front of Jesus. Like, all right, well, if we can't get in that way, we're going in this way. And then there's this hubbub with the church leaders of the day. And Jesus has this great line about, is it easier to forgive sins or to heal someone's body? Because they were all mad about him saying that this guy was forgiven.
That was the first thing he said, too. So the guy gets dropped down. He's paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing Jesus says is, I forgive your sins.
Right.
What?
Which is sort of, it's like, can you imagine the guys on the roof? They're like, wait, this wasn't the deal.
You're missing the point, Jesus.
Yeah.
And he says, maybe not.
Right.
Maybe I'm not missing the point. Like, maybe as dang hard as it is, forgiveness is the first thing. It's the most healing, powerful thing that I can give you.
Yeah. Yeah, and
that we can give each other.
And just that line to the Pharisees, those teachers.
Which is easier?
Yeah.
To say to this paralyzed man, your sins are forgiven, or to say, get up, take your mat and walk.
Yeah. What's implied there is that it's harder to heal somebody, you know, heal their body or whatever. Create this miraculous healing. But it almost feels like you guys get how hard this is to forgive, but it's worth it.
Yeah, and he's kind of saying, you think it's about this. You think it's about the outward stuff, but you're missing this whole deeper current that is where we get our walls up, and love and life cannot flow, and healing cannot flow with those walls up.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to take them down. He wants us to take them down. Ooh, yeah. Okay. I think we have more work to do.
Yeah.
Thank you for this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Callie, thanks for being here. This has been great. We'll see you next time.